You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
So what happens when some serious horse people get together to try to better the sport? We're about to find out. On this episode, we're talking about what's next for the thoroughbred aftercare industry, and do weight loss drugs exist for horses? Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks.
Welcome to Happy Hour.
I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Wasnicka. Welcome to episode 146 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
Hello, hello.
What's going on?
Mud.
Not much.
Mud.
Yeah, mud.
Full season of showing. We're, you know, in the thick of it.
It's peak season for everybody, which means folks are leaving Florida, Ellie's in the mud, and Jess is traveling all over.
Pretty much.
And it's tax season, so I'm a solo horse keeper here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, in the mud.
This episode is brought to you by EcoGold. So it sounds like we could all use a drink then, especially yep. Ellie. So I got a fun one, something a little different for us. And I figured, you know, it's the end of March. We're fully in spring. And why not celebrate the spring equinox with a Negroni Blanco?
Oh.
So I know you're not a big gin drinker, Jess, but I bet you could put something else in it. Maybe vodka.
Some vodka sounds probably good substitute for sure.
But it's a pretty easy drink here. So the recommendation is like one part gin, one part bitter Bianco, and then one part sparkling grapefruit juice. So like half, you know, to do that, you would do like half grapefruit juice, half soda water. And that's pretty much it. You just sort of mix that all into your glass. You can add some ice if you want. Give it a good stir. If you want to be fancy and garnish it, you can like use like a wedge from your pink grapefruit. But I had one of these at a wedding a while ago and was just reminded of it because I was with friends from that wedding over the weekend. And it was really good. And it was a very popular drink. It was like,
Is it refreshing? Because I feel like it'd be like a refreshing drink too.
It is. Yeah. I'm not a super big grapefruit person, but I like the bitterness of it with a little bit of sparkling, you know?
Yeah.
And it feels, again, like if you're not a gin person, I feel like you could sub out your liquor of like really anything. Like I think vodka would be fine in this, maybe even tequila, you know?
I like how easy these instructions are. This is more my speed.
Yeah.
Yeah, you kind of
just easy one for you.
You glug pour a little stuff here. In the cup.
Stir it and drink it. So this is a good one. All right, it's time for news. I figured I'll go first because I've got exciting news that just happened this week here in Florida. WEC hosted the Longines League of Nations in Ocala, which is a relatively new annual thing that they've been doing. And they do such a nice job. They really build out that main arena right at the foot of the hotel. They really make it look beautiful. Like the jumps are beautiful, the grounds are beautiful, and they make it feel like an elevated WEC experience. Like this is a very special event. And so it looked like it was sold out. Like there were all the stands were packed full of people to watch it this last weekend. And the German team came out on top. They had four riders.
It was amazing to watch.
It was cool. You know, Richard Vogel's like just been, I feel like, at the top of his game lately, but they just had a great team. And they took home the win.
And
it was just super fun to watch. But you know, it was like all the big names were there. A lot of Olympic horses, probably more pairs that we might see in LA in a couple years. But it was really fun and just a beautiful horse show to watch.
Well, speaking of horse shows, we went down. We were actually in town this past weekend, and we went down to Carolina. Doug went and walked the course with Mary Bess, which was fun, and we got to see and catch up with Will Coleman and Tammy, who are good friends of ours. We did dinner with everybody. And, you know, we wished Tammy luck. She told us she came across, you know, she came from California over to Aiken. And then she's here to do the spring circuit. And wow, did she not kill it. Like, she came in first in the 4-star, first in the 3-star, and first in the 2-star. She is on fire to start her season, and it was super cool to watch. We watched a bunch of it. We didn't watch it live. We watched online, but super proud that should be a really good season. Some of the horses are looking in top form, and yeah, can't wait to watch the rest of the event. You know, even though we still don't event anymore, we still love to cheer on some friends and everything else. So was really, really excited for her because she has some special horses coming up and she really dominated.
It was amazing. And like, you know, for her to like load the horses up and trek it across the country, like what yeah. an ordeal.
Yeah. And then to just come out on fire.
She should feel like amazing because that's, right? you know, we always talk about this like East Coast versus West Coast for the sport. And the West Coast definitely feels like a quieter area for eventing. So for her to come over here, like in the thick of it of show season, really shows that, you know, obviously she's got the chops. She's doing something right in her program.
Well, she's been putting in the time into her fitness and herself. Like she said, she's been working out a bunch. She's trying to get stronger and, you know, just really doing right by her own body, her own horses, everything else. Like, we talked a lot about that I'm glad that it paid off. Like she knows that that's exactly what's working for her system and her program. And she absolutely killed it.
Yeah. Very cool. I love to see that.
Yeah. Yeah. Ellie, what do you have?
So I have some interesting news. So I know it's impossible to not know right now what Ozempic is and what Ozempic does. But there was a question on Equus that was, are there any like GLP-1 type drugs for horses? And the vet answered, Dr. Nicholas Frank is from Mississippi University. And, you know, he talked about, you know, Ozempic mimicking the effects of glucagon-like peptide 1, which is a natural hormone that regulates, you know, blood sugar and appetite. Although they've been used successfully in people, there has been nothing developed for horses to date. You know, and a lot of research would be required to figure out the dose and also, you know, the side effects for horses. He said, you know, unfortunately, or fortunately, diet and exercise remain the best strategies for obesity in horses. But I thought was interesting is that for tougher cases, veterinarians can also prescribe like a synthetic thyroid hormone, which is like the levothyroxine, which stimulates metabolism. So it's at a higher dose for like 3 to 6 months to like encourage weight loss. And what it does is it's used specifically in horses where like they have high blood insulin concentrations and like does not respond to, you know, diet and exercise. So those are the SGLT2 inhibitors, and those are used like they're more horses that are likely to be insulin resistant, but then also for horses that are like prone to founder. Which I thought was really interesting.
That is interesting. I think it's like I saw the headline for this story in the Equus magazine and I was like, oh my God, like, of course we're like GLP-1s are trending. So we're going to talk about them for horses. But, you know, I guess you got the metabolic types or, you know, the easy keepers that it's an interesting question to ask. But wow, that is interesting about the thyroid stuff, though. That's good to know.
Yeah, I think my mom's horse was on something like that. It was like since he was on such high doses of steroids, he was on like some kind of like founder, like help,
preventative.
Like it was like a preventative. Yeah, there's the word I'm looking for. I can't remember the actual name of it, so I'm not sure if it was, but I know that he was on something like that. But I don't know how I feel about like Ozempic for horses, because you know now we're hearing all of the like bone density problems and things like that, and you know right. it's easier to explain that to a person like, hey, you need to make sure you're, you know, doing this to make sure your bone density is, you know, you're gaining the muscle, because you don't just lose fat with Ozempic, right? You also lose muscle mass and bone density. So I would worry about horses, because horses are horses. that would not be good. I want them to have as much bone density as possible.
Sure. Yeah, no, that's a really good point. We just don't know enough yet, you know? But
I think that's the biggest thing.
Exactly. So I guess we'll see. We'll see if an Ozempic eventually exists for horses. Oh, boy.
All right. I've got a question for you guys. So what is, like, your go-to bag at the horse show? Like, that you bring to the ring with you? What is something that, like, 5 to 10 items that, like, you cannot go without?
Like, for so like, all day, like, you show up at the horse show, like, what you have in your purse to survive the day is what you're thinking?
Like, like, this is the things that you need, you know? This bag's going to go with you to the ring.
This bag comes to the horse shows with me. It's like my backpack. It has my name on it. It is what fits my helmet. It fits all my stuff. And honestly, like, I don't really trade it out. And so sometimes it will go to the ring with me, depending if I need it. Most time it just sits in the tack room, to be honest. But it is 100% extra hairnets, because when I go in the morning, half the time, like, one's ripped or something. And it used to have the hair ties as well in it, because I could not find them or whatever else. And I love the big, like, they're like curly, I don't know, like, they don't cut up my hair and stuff, hair ties, but they don't go in a helmet well.
Oh, the scrunchies. So have
like scrunchies, but mine are a different kind of scrunchie. Anyways, but I couldn't use those with my helmet. But now I use those Ellsworth, or Ellsworth, or I know I'm butchering
that.
Oh, the
name. Ellsworth, yeah.
Ellsworth. Those hair nets are amazing, because now they have the hair tie. So it's like a one and done. So I have extra ones of those hair nets, like, stuffed inside. So, like, if one has a rip in it, it doesn't look funny. And then I, in the bottom of my main pocket, have an extra rain jacket, because I always forget to pack one. So, like, I have an extra rain jacket
in
there.
Yeah.
And then I have my extra spurs. So if I need different spurs for different horses, like, I have those in there. I generally will have, like, some sort of ball cap or, like, just a hat, because if I'm stuck at the ring and I want to take my helmet off, like, I can just, you know, take one of the my original hair tie and put it in and run with a hat, you know, at least I have a hat. And then sunscreen, tons of sunscreen, face and body.
See, I'm surprised that you like the Ellsworth hairnet. I tried it, and I think my hair is too thick. Like, it's just a nightmare. It all falls out. I can't keep it.
So,
like,
the
in
funny
it.
Thing is, I was talking with Jasmine at Ride Equisafe, and she's like, I think I'm doing it wrong. And I think really you have to know how, like, it's weird to do it to start. And then I promise you, like, the thickest amount of hair could still go. And I, like, if I'm at home, and one of my helmets fits better if my hair's actually down. So I can still do that hair net with my hair down.
Okay. All right. I see what you're saying. Cause yeah, I tried and it was a disaster. I'm not gonna lie.
I think it's kind of hard to understand how to.
They're expensive for what it was. So I was like, how is this not computing?
Yeah.
But that's the main problem.
But I think I might have to show you. I might have to show you how to do it, because if you figure it out and it works, it is a game changer.
Okay. All right. I'll trust you. Okay. So my bag, being in Florida, sunscreen number one, like, it's my face sunscreen is in there. I live in SPF 70 and above, just because Florida is brutal and I'm getting too old.
You have to.
Exactly. So, and I'm not a huge fan of the mineral sunscreen, but that's the way I've gone lately. I've got a couple of brands I like. So there's always sunscreen in that bag. And if I don't put it in there, my husband does. He's, like, worse than me about making sure I wear sunscreen these days. So, and then I also I'll always have an extra pair of sunglasses for the horse show, because I lose them constantly. Always.
Oh, there's an extra pair in my truck. Like, so the truck's always there. Even if I don't drive the truck there, there's one in the sunglass case in my red truck.
But then you're far away from the truck. I always keep an extra pair in the bag, because I'll like take the pair out of the truck and then I leave it in the show trunk back at the barn. Yeah. And then I'm like, where the heck is it?
They would get pushed.
I'm the worst. I go through so many pairs of sunglasses, so I always leave an extra pair in the bag that goes to the ring, like my husband's carrying, you know? And then always bobby pins and safety pins just for when my hair net's malfunctioning or nice. I need, you know, you like I've safety pins, you know, I don't use them for my numbers that often anymore, but like I've definitely like snagged my clothes and you need to like close something up. You never like safety pins. You never know. And I'm always glad that I have them. Almost every horse show, somebody like there's a problem that my pile of safety pins can fix. So I always bring them.
That's so funny.
And then I'm also into like snacks. You always need a snack. It's brutal out here. You're in the sun all day. You need something. So I always keep like cuties, like the oranges or a banana or like a little can of pistachios, like something quick to eat that will give you energy. If you're hungry at ringside or somebody around you is in chapstick. Chapstick is also
gotta keep it. Chapstick's great, but Doug always has chapstick, so I never have chapstick.
Okay. All right. What about
okay,
you,
can
Ellie?
I borrow your chapstick?
What do you got in your bag?
Well, first and foremost, peppermint, bribes, rewards. They're always there. It's bad, too, because I literally have Berkeley conditioned and partially my trainer growing up, too. Like, anytime he comes out of the ring and he's, like, put in, like, a stellar round, he will look at my trainer, like, treat now. Like, that was phenomenal. And even now that I show without, he will literally turn around and look at my knee like, excuse me. So that's always in my bag. I love them. And, like, also, like, for me, too, like, I like to suck on the peppermints, like, if I have a long wait and stuff. Because I hate to like ride with gum, but it gives my mouth something to do. I am with you, Justine, on the safety pins. You know, as a big chested person, I have busted too many buttons to not have a safety pin with me at all times.
Smart.
So
yeah.
Funny.
So that's a definite. And then I'm a big, like, especially with my, you know, MS, I have to worry about like regulating my body temperature. So cold water is like a big for me. Like I always have a ridiculous amount of water, like 3 bottles, like just always. And then I know I've talked about it before, but again, I have my astringent and my cotton pads to wipe my face off and cool myself down. And then I always have a hard brush. Because, you know, sometimes they water right before you go in. And I don't know, with a black horse, like, it bothers me when he has all this, like, you know, arena dirt covering him being black in photographs. So I will brush him between rounds just to make sure his legs look clean and the boots are nice before I go back in. So, yeah, those are with me.
That makes sense.
Definitely. All good stuff.
Plan your 2026 competition schedule with one unmatched HITS experience across 6 premier venues, including HITS Ocala, HITS Del Mar, HITS Culpeper, HITS Chicago, HITS Hudson Valley, and HITS Vermont. Featuring 7 total WCHR weeks, 10 total FEI jumping weeks, and opportunities for horse and riders of all levels from coast to coast. This action-packed year will be one to remember. Learn more at www.hitsshows.com. Please welcome our first guest, Daniel Geithner. He is a friend of ours from Aiken, but he is also a Grand Prix show jumper, and he was National Equestrian of the Year in 2025. He and his wife, Kathy, own DFG Stables in Aiken and in Ocala. And he is also here to talk to us about a new organization that he has got started.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So tell us a little bit about the organization, why you got it started, and the name and everything else.
So it's the United States Equestrian Trainers Association, or USETA. Chris Wynn and Carlton Brooks and myself all got together and formed this group the end of last year. And it was really Chris Wynn's brainchild. You know, he's been talking about this for a while, and he got the ball rolling, and we jumped in. And really, it's a, you know, maybe trainers association isn't the best word. It's more of a professional Horse People Association. You know, we have some stewards, some judges, some show managers on board. We've got a couple vets that are coming on board. You know, it's and it's an organization where we can all get together, have one strong voice, hopefully lots of members, one strong voice, to try to make our industry better. We're really wanting to start from the bottom up, not just top down. And, you know, we want to try to help all levels of equestrian activities.
So you're passionate about this, but what made you want to be involved in this, and what inspired, I know Chris started it, but what made you inspired to kind of get behind this and become one of the, you know, lead professionals that's going to get all this up and running?
You know, I'm getting a little up there in age, and I want to give back, and I've got, several reasons. I have, a lot of colleagues that, are in the industry, and, you know, they were never, you know, when we became professionals, we were never taught, the ins and the outs of the business, whether you need, what kind of insurance you need to have, or how you should set up your business, an LLC or a S Corp. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff that, you just kind of had to learn by the seat of your pants. Not only that, but, how to become a judge, how to become a steward. There's a lot of things that aren't necessarily taught. There's not a lot of literature out there. So we're trying to help all professionals,
and not make the mistakes that we had to make.
Exactly. Learn their way. We've got an exciting thing. We're working with an insurance person who's going to help out, and their family member rides, and they want to give back to the industry about helping young and old professionals, or people in the business, understand what their insurance needs are. You know, I've got friends who have had some legal troubles, whether it's with a client or an infraction with the USEF, and we'd love to be able to be an ear to talk to, and see if we can lend a hand to people like this.
So what is the goal for the organization, both, I guess, short term and long term? I think it's great that you're going to get all this knowledge out. What is the, what is the end goal?
Short term, I would say we've got several interesting projects we're working on. We're trying to assimilate, what a lot of people, a lot of professionals in the industry, we're trying to get them to help voice their concerns. Stuff we can tackle as a group, and it's not one person tackling these things. I think long term, like I said, we'd love to be able to provide assistance to professionals in the industry, whether it's helping them start a business or get their judge's card, or, help them along their pathway. And again, Carlton, Chris, and myself, we've been doing this a long time, and we've all made a lot of mistakes, and we'd like to help others avoid those pitfalls. I'd love to see, eventually us being able to help people set up retirement accounts, and, whether we do it or we've got somebody on our board and committee that can steer them in the right direction. Just so people can plan for the future. And then work with the USCF, the USHGA, and the horse shows, whether they're local or national, to, make our sport better for the exhibitors, the owners, trainers, all the people involved, and the horses. This is why we're doing this, is for the horses. And, I think all three of us would like to leave it in a better place than when we started.
Interesting. So Daniel, obviously you've been in the industry for a while. You've been around the hunter jumper circuits. I'm sure you've seen your fair share of interesting things that you hope you could change. I wonder, what do you see personally as someone, what do you think are some of the largest issues facing our American equestrian sport right now that you think your organization could maybe help change?
Yeah, you know, I think, one of the, one of the largest difficulties in getting in the business as far as professionals or owners or new clients, is the expense of it all. And I think it's not going to be an easy one to work with horse shows and the USEF to try to help, mitigate the expense. But I mean, we see a lot of horse shows now offering free entry fees for young jumpers, free entry fees for young hunters. Not all horse shows, but, several of the big winter circuits are doing that. And I think steps like those are certainly in the right direction, and we need to keep encouraging as many shows to do these type of things as possible. With horse shows providing free entry fees or lower entry fees for these young hunter and young jumper classes, it provides a segue into professionals owning horses, amateurs owning horses, mitigating the expense a little bit. For myself, if I own a horse and I get to show this horse for free, I don't have to sell this horse for quite as much money when it comes time to sell. So I think it's a trickle down effect there, to help everything cost a little bit less. That's certainly one of our large things. And, the other thing I think is, I worry that a lot of our governing bodies aren't out in the trenches with us, and knowing what we go through, where these shows are difficult. There's a lot going on. It's very unnatural for the horses, and I'd like our new rule changes and our, stuff we're looking at for the future to take into mind, what we're all dealing with down in the stables. I'm going to, one example that just came to my mind a few days ago was the, FEI now does not allow you to clip a horse's ears, which, I'm the muzzle and the eyelashes, I completely understand, but our shows now are so loud, boisterous. We all need to use earplugs or cotton in their ears to help, not desensitize their noise level. And, if you've ever put earplugs in a horse with long hair and then pulled them out, you're pulling hair out, and pretty soon in a day or two, they're head shy and bridle shy. And, so that's just one of the things. I'm not sure who made up that rule or why anyone thought it was a good idea, but from a common sense horseman view, that really just doesn't fly. And so these are, and there's, quite a few examples like this of things that, were pretty aha moment to me that, I think we'd like to address some of these things.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, things change over time, right? Rules change.
Absolutely.
In USEF and FEI. But I mean, just curious, as someone who's been in the sport a long time, Daniel, why and how do you think we've gotten to the place we're at now in horse sports? I mean, because clearly you have something to say, and you've been around horses a long time, and you wouldn't think that this organization needs to exist if you felt like maybe our governing bodies weren't listening to the people involved in the sport, right?
Yeah, I think that's a lot of it. We need to have a voice. And when there's concerns like this, we'd like to not just be one person moaning. We want to come together as a group. And whether we vote on it and decide we're passionate about this, but come together as a group of horsemen. And I mean, I'd love it if we had 2,000 members 1,800 of them were USDF members. And we can go to them and say, guys, we're serious. You know, we really mean this. You know, and it's also working with the horse shows. I have a great example. I'm down here at WAC Ocala, and they struggle a little for lunging areas in the morning. And I, a couple of years ago, kind of noticed that there was an enormous schooling area that was completely empty all morning. So I went to them and I said, guys, how about, you know, we open this up for lunging in the mornings. You can fit 10 horses, big circles. It's a great idea. And they did it. And it's been a hit ever since. And, you know, that didn't cost them any money. And I didn't go to them and scream and yell and say, we need more lunging areas. I tried to figure out a solution to it. You know, so I'd love it if we have a group together where we're all not going to be at the same horse show. But if, you know, Chris Wynn and Carlton Brooks are at a show and they see something that needs addressed, we're going to stand behind them as a group and you know, follow their lead.
Yeah.
So, you know, and we would like to, we're going to sometime soon, you know, come out and acknowledge these circuits and horse shows that are offering free entry fees to young hunters and jumpers and say, we as trainers, owners, professionals,
we support these.
Yeah, we see it. We thank you. That's really noticed. You know, so, you know, I don't think we don't all want to be negative and, you know, only pick out the bad. We want to support the good so that hopefully other shows will take notice and, you know, follow suit.
Yeah, absolutely. So how is the organization going to work? Is it like a membership or like a pay to be a member?
Exactly. Yeah. It's a membership. It's $75. You know, right now we have, we have one person on salary that does our website and social media and stuff like that. We have two great lawyers that are on our committee and they're working pro bono. You know, so yeah, right now it's a small membership. You know, and it's really, we're going to start doing a little bit of advertising. You know, but there's no one making money in it. It's just to kind of keep this thing afloat and keep it going. And you know, we're hoping to eventually be able to offer more stuff. We're about to, we actually just went public today. We're going to start doing, judges clinics. And where if there's, a person that thinks they might want to become a hunter judge, they can sign up and go sit with one of our expert judges all week at a horse show and get classroom sessions, back and forth, question and answer sessions, you know, and learn how to judge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I see this as a real valuable tool that we can offer to the horse industry because we're dire lacking of judges. And you know, there's a lot of people I know that are young and old professionals that are not sure if they want to judge. And, you know, they can go sit for a week and learn how to judge and decide if there's something they'd be interested in pursuing. We're hoping it gets popular enough where we get sanctioned by the USEF and they start to recognize, you know, the program we're offering. 'Cause right now it's, you know, it's, actually right now there's a moratorium on new judges for the year. So that you can't even become a judge right now if you want to. So you know, we're hoping to offer that assistance. And we've got a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff on the horizon. We're gonna try to do a mentor program where you can come shadow a trainer or a judge for a week, you know, if you're approved. And yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff on the table in the future.
Absolutely. Well, it sounds super interesting. It sounds like something a lot of us really, I think, would like to be involved in. And so, yeah, where can we reach out? Where can, if we want to get involved, everybody wants to get involved, where's the best way? On the website or where is the best way to find out?
Yes, on the website. Yes, on the website. We have a Facebook page, United States Equestrian Trainers Association. And you can send in a message, either one of those, and, you know, one of us will get back to you. I think there's a way you can join on both of those. You know, and we encourage, I mean, we're going to try to branch out and have, you know, a committee of judges, a committee of stewards, of veterinarians, you know, to help guide us on the, we want to get as many industry experts as we can to help us navigate through some of these issues we're going to be dealing with.
Yeah. No, it sounds amazing.
Well, Daniel, thanks so much for joining us. We learned a lot chatting with you and appreciate it.
Oh, thank you guys. That was awesome and very simple. I appreciate it.
No slipping, no sliding, no problem. EcoGold's secure saddle pads are engineered to keep the horse's back comfortable while keeping the saddle in place for a safe, competitive ride. They have impact protection through the seat, and the ultra-thin flaps provide the rider with better communication and a more stable riding position. Available in both English and Western styles. Shop the entire collection at ecogold.ca.
All right, everybody. I'm really excited to introduce our next guest. It's Kirsten Green from the Retired Racehorse Project. Kirsten grew up riding thoroughbred lesson horses and dressage and eventing, and eventually pursued a career riding and teaching. And that eventually led her to the Retired Racehorse Project, which she has led for several years now. And the Retired Racehorse Project just put out a really interesting strategic report for 2026, which we're going to get all into the details of that here shortly. But Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me on.
So I'm excited to delve into this report, which I think is really interesting to anybody who owns a thoroughbred, who is interested in adopting a thoroughbred after their life at the racetrack. But I want to back up first because as someone who's competed at the makeover and owns thoroughbreds and is a huge thoroughbred fan, I feel like I'm constantly telling, like trying to correct small language choices of people when they talk about thoroughbreds. And I think people think of the RRP as one thing, but you guys do a lot of things. So can we start by just tell me what the mission of the Retired Racehorse Project is and how long have you been involved with the organization?
Yeah. Well, I think I'll just like small, like kind of editor's note is that, and this is totally normal. Like I'm not like calling you out or anything. So Retired Racehorse Project, or like RRP, is the nonprofit organization that puts on the Thoroughbred Makeover, which is the event. And so, but kind of colloquially, and you'll see it a lot online, when people say that they're going to the RRP or my horse is RRP eligible, what they're referring to is the event that the organization hosts.
Exactly. yeah.
Yeah. So, and we're just like, we don't fight it anymore. Like if that's the kind of brand recognition you have, like you just kind of go with it. But yeah, the Retired Racehorse Project is a 501c3 nonprofit that's headquartered in Maryland. And our mission is to increase demand for thoroughbreds in second career sports. So whether it's sports, recreational riding, therapeutic, like anything post beyond racing, and to give the people that are associated with the breed the tools that they need to be successful. So, you know, very much just kind of facilitation, incentive, promotion, education. I go and sit in an office every day and look at a computer, and I don't see horses every day. Like we don't have a facility. Like we're not doing the kind of boots on the ground transition work, whether that's, you know, through nonprofit aftercare or people who just kind of make their living in the space. But our work is very relevant to and supportive of just trying to make sure that horses transition safely and effectively from their racing careers to whatever the next chapter is going to be.
And so you mentioned that it's different than, you know, the Thoroughbred Makeover and the organization, but how has the organization RRP grown over the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've been involved with the organization since very early on. I got involved as a volunteer in 2013 and then eventually joined staff in 2014. And just didn't leave. So I haven't been the executive director the whole time. There's a founding executive director and, you know, a previous executive director before me, but it has definitely grown. The makeover, we got started very much focused on the kind of mid-Atlantic horse expos, doing demonstrations and short format kind of competitions and stuff like that. But it wasn't really until like we did the first makeovers at Pimlico and then ultimately moved the makeover to the horse park in 2015 that like we really kind of like rocketed to like national visibility. So the makeover has continued to be kind of our most visible program. But over time, we have had other programs that have kind of always been going on in the background, always available, and we've kind of maintained, you know, with the makeover continuing to be the kind of like highly visible showcase, you know, flagship thing that we do. So for a while, we were publishing a quarterly magazine called Not Off Track Thoroughbred Magazine. We have since transitioned that to digital publishing. So we're still publishing the same amount of original content, but we're just doing it, you know, on a monthly schedule and straight to our website. That's all that content is available for free. So articles about training, nutrition, care, all of that sort of thing are in our education library on our website. We've also hosted a horse listing service for basically our entire existence. So anytime a thoroughbred needs to move from one home to another, no matter what the point in their kind of life cycle, we have that service available for free on our website. And we've just continued to really focus on the educational aspect of things. So we do continue to do a fair amount of demos, clinics, seminars, whether they are, you know, webinars online throughout the year, or if we're going to go, like we've always done, demos at the Kentucky 3-Day. That continues to be a really big part of the stuff that we do as well.
Yeah, I'm obviously a huge fan. I competed in the Thoroughbred Makeover in 2023, and a large part of that process was shared on our show. So it's really nice to talk to you and really see what the RP is doing like into the future. So thinking or with that in mind, Kirsten, I was hoping we could talk about the strategic report that the RRP just put out a couple weeks ago. Can you give us the highlight? Is this something you do every year, or is there something special about the report that you put out this year?
It's certainly near and dear to my heart. It's kind of remarkably, the organization has gotten to, we turned 15 years old last year, and we have made it that far without going through a formal strategic planning process. And that was a big goal of mine when I became executive director in 2022, was to get that process done. So I'm very pleased that we went through with all of it. We very much were kind of feeling the sense of just like, okay, like we do the makeover, we're good at doing the makeover. Like there's other stuff that we want to do, but we know that the makeover really is commanding all of our resources, both financial and human, and how do we kind of balance that out so that we can further cultivate the things that we already do and stand up things that we feel like the thoroughbred breed and the aftercare space really need. So we, you know, really took the process very seriously, worked with a facilitator that does nonprofit strategic planning, did a lot of stakeholder interviews, community surveys, just the works. And it was a fairly tiring process. Like, I don't know if any of you have, you know, in your day job had to do anything like that, but it's kind of exciting and exhausting at the same time. So we were all kind of like mush by the end of the year, but
oh, I bet.
We're really excited to have it done. And it kind of gives us the clarity of, because it's 2026 through 2030. So it really kind of gives our team the clarity and the roadmap of like, okay, like we've all come together as a staff and as a board and talked through all these ideas that we've had recently, and we've come to an agreement on how we're going to focus our time and energy. And and resources, our cash resources. So really excited about that. There's kind of a couple big highlights. As I already mentioned, the kind of immediate near-term thing that we need to address is balancing the makeover amongst the other things that we do, and getting ourselves in a financial position so that we can scale our staff and scale our services. So that's a kind of like a number one, address that first, do not pass go if we can't like address these pieces. Kind of ongoing in the kind of like background of all of that is what really became clear in some of our stakeholder interviews and our community surveys is that RP is definitely regarded as a leading voice in aftercare and considered like a national, like high level organization. And so we want to be sure that we are leaning into that and continuing to make sure that RRP's voice is at the table when we're having discussions about kind of overall aftercare in terms of how we're going to be funding those sorts of things and which organizations are going to focus on what and that sort of thing. And just making sure that the RRP kind of clearly stakes our flag and kind of what we're contributing to the greater landscape. And then another big one is really leveraging our data. And that's kind of, it's not as well described in some of our documents as I think it really needs to be. I think what we've been doing over the last couple, I mean, over the time that we've been running the makeover is a very instinctually hoarding data. Like, I don't think a lot of people realize that when they register a horse for the makeover, you just tell us who our horse is. A human being takes that and goes like off into Equibase and Equine Line and that sort of thing and pulls a lot of data on that horse's like breeding and racing history. And then also kind of examines some of the acquisition information and so that we can kind of aggregate that and report on kind of how the greater aftercare industry is functioning and performing. And we've kind of continually just kept collecting that data and knowing like there's more that we can do with this, like we're just going to hang on to it. So we've got over 5,000 horses in our database at this point. And I think one of the big things that we want to work on is really quantifying the breed's contribution to sport, in sport breeding and accomplishments in different equestrian pursuits so that we can really start quantifying that and saying, making sure that the thoroughbred is getting the credit that it's due in the kind of equestrian space. Because for all intents and purposes, the thoroughbred riding horse doesn't have a breed association. Like the jockey club is the registry and they have some programming that is relevant to non-racing owners, but that's not very, it's a start, but it needs to be more. And that's one of the biggest thing that we are aiming to address is like, how do we get the thoroughbred kind of on equal playing field with all other riding breeds? And I think some of that really comes down to like, we need an actual breed association and the RRP in particular is really well positioned to tackle some of that stuff. So those are kind of the big themes. And of course, as in many industries, like, and in aftercare and racing, kind of thoroughbred landscape in particular, we don't have total control over how that progresses. You know, interest and support from the racing industry are going to play a big part in that.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So the organization in this space, like between the racing industry and the sport industry, where horses transform from one job to the next, I think is just like incredible what you guys do. But can you explain how the aftercare industry works?
Yeah, absolutely. This is one of my favorite things to talk about because I don't think that like racing and the aftercare industry take enough credit for this sort of thing when people are having that kind of like Thanksgiving dinner table conversation with their aunt who thinks horse racing is terrible. Like the thoroughbred racing industry has actually done a lot to make sure to invest and to get us to a point where we actually have an ecosystem in the United States that is making sure that we have mechanisms to get the horses appropriately transitioned from one career to the next. And that looks different. There's aftercare in all racing jurisdictions all over the world, and it looks a little bit different all over the world, depending on racing's significance in the culture, how racing is regulated in that country. So it really varies a little bit. Aftercare in North America is a little bit of a microcosm of racing of it in and of itself, because there is no national governing body for horse racing as a sport. It's all regulated on by state level commissions. So what that has kind of resulted in is, you know, we say it's an ecosystem. We have a lot of different both entities and just kind of private, you know, for-profit individuals who are working in what truly has become a sector in and of itself, people who are dedicated to doing the work of making sure that the horses are transitioning. So that can include listing agents, whether, again, it's individuals or services like Cantor or Finger Lakes Finest. You have the accredited aftercare facilities. That means that they've received accreditation status from the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance. So they are nonprofit facilities that are taking ownership of the horses and adopting them out. So that's going to be like Mid-Atlantic Horse Rescue or New Vocations, that type of model. We have sanctuary programs. Many of them have elements of therapy use, equine-assisted services or equine-assisted therapy. And then we have, you know, resellers and retrainers who, again, are just people who make their living in the space. And that kind of as a collective. And then the last wedge of the kind of pie is the incentive and advocacy programs is what we call them. So that's like RRP, the Jockey Club's Thoroughbred Incentive Program, Take Two out of New York. Like those are all programs that are kind of benefiting the collective through their incentive programs and their education and that sort of thing. So that's kind of everything that when somebody says aftercare, quote unquote, like that's how we would define it. A lot of people, when they say aftercare, they do just kind of first think of the kind of TAA accredited nonprofit facility, but there really is quite a bit more to the overall landscape than just that. And I think it's really beautiful because what we have ended up in terms of scope of service really works well, considering that the needs of the horses are going to vary, the needs of the retiring connections are going to vary, the needs of the quote unquote end consumer that is, you know, taking that horse into a riding career, like their level of experience and their needs are going to vary. And we have like these systems that can meet any of those needs. So all that said, it's really great. Like huge progress that we've made, particularly in the last 10 to 15 years. But so many of our organizations are all very similarly aged, and we're all reaching this point where we're like, okay, we've made it this far, we've done this much, but here's all this other stuff that still could stand to be done that would benefit the kind of process and the industry. So a lot more to do still as well.
So also since the report came out, there's been some really interesting conversations about the language, like dropping the OTTB and just calling the horse what it is, a thoroughbred. And like, why is that important to you instead of just like, you know, the OTTB?
I think one of the things that we're, I think, particularly as the organization that is possibly the most concerned with marketing the breed, we are really sensitive to the words that we're using to describe the breed. And I think, and this was through no one's ill intent, what we have ended up with is aftercare is thought of as being a very charity-centric process. There are a lot of really great 501c3 programs that are operating in this space that are so important and so necessary. But what has also happened is the breed has been fighting to overcome this concept of like They're all broken down. Their brains are all fried from racing. They're pumped up on a lot of drugs. And I think that every little thing that we do that, like, is associated to that or, like, in any way bolsters that kind of line of thought needs to be looked at. And so I think, you know, just coming down to just calling it a thoroughbred, like, there are so many other breeds of horse on this planet that, you know, they might be bred for one thing, start out doing one thing, have a career change and go on and do something else. And that happens day in, day out, and nobody bats an eye. But because the racing industry is very different from the riding industry, we look at it as being this huge leap. And it's just not that huge of a jump, basically. So I think that there's a lot that we can do to really kind of normalize and kind of help address stigma if we're just being really thoughtful about our words. And I'll be the first to say that probably includes not using words like makeover. And, you know, being careful about, you know, there's a lot of organizations out there that have, like, recycle and stuff like that in there. And so it's just like, I think we just need to be really cognizant of, like, or like the word aftercare too, just kind of has this like baked in connotation of like, there has to be some kind of intervention in this horse's life. And that's just not, it's, we can be looking at it through a much more positive lens than I think we are. And I don't think anybody sat down and was like, this is what the brand of every of this line of work or this industry is going to be. It was all very well intentioned, but I think we've just collectively as an industry moved the needle, and we kind of need to be presenting ourselves a little bit different and representing our breed differently.
Yeah, I hear that. I think it's, you know, like, thoughts evolve, our perspectives evolve, right? Our language should evolve with that. So I think
exactly.
I think it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's not going to happen overnight. Like, we're not going to jump up and, like, rename our organization and our event tomorrow. Like, that's just not instantaneous stuff. But I think that we can kind of be a thought leader and find places where we can be cognizant and make those adjustments. And I think that it'll come a lot easier than anybody thinks it will.
Yeah, no, I love your attitude for sure. Like, so I was curious because the report also mentions national policy. What type of policy changes would you like to see?
That's a little bit of, we struggled with how to word that because, as I mentioned, like, aftercare is a little bit of a microcosm in racing, and just kind of there's no governing body for aftercare really either. I mean, there's, you know, accrediting bodies like the TAA, which are great, but there's not, you know, some like overarching oversight. So I think some of when we say national policy, some of that is just a matter of coming together in circumstances with other kind of national level organizations and brainstorming on things, information sharing, making sure that we're kind of in alignment in how we approach our respective work. I also think that we're reaching a point where we're going to start seeing on the kind of state regulation level a little bit more consideration for aftercare. So that could mean racing commissions who are licensing racehorse owners and racehorse trainers, you know, they're required to do continuing education. And I think that we'll start seeing some momentum to where, you know, maybe we have like an aftercare continuing education course to make sure that these people that are, you know, at the front line of that like point of retirement decision process are, you know, well educated on the options and stuff that are available to them. So it might not necessarily mean like we're going to go to Capitol Hill and fight on X, Y, or Z issue, but that could be kind of a little bit more on the local level in terms of governance from district to district, representing the kind of aftercare perspective and the things that are relevant to that industry. You know, another good example is like whether or not we can get the SAFE Act passed. That's big national level legislation. And, you know, there's implications for that getting passed that are certainly going to be that are adjacent to aftercare, relevant to aftercare. We certainly would like to get to a point where we can address that pipeline. And if we get that passed, like, what are the implications of that for those of us working in the space? It'll be a win, but then we also have to make sure that we're prepared to address unwanted horse issues. So I think just making sure that RRP is in a space where we can represent our constituency and the people that are doing the work, making sure that their voices are heard in those conversations.
So Kirsten, the strategic report that goes from 2026 to 2030 is available on the website, right? So if folks want to read it themselves, that's all publicly available.
Yep, absolutely. There's it's, you know, a dozen slides or something like that map through, like, there's three main priorities and kind of like action points and focus areas underneath. And it goes through all of that. And we're really excited to share it with our community. We want to spread it far and wide. We want to talk to people about it. So really do invite people to go ahead and take a look and drop us a line and let us know your thoughts. It's pretty prominent there on our homepage, on our website at therrp.org.
Got it. And if anybody wants to be more involved with the RRP, I imagine that website's a great place to start too.
Yeah, that's, you know, being involved with RRP looks a little bit different than, you know, getting involved with your local aftercare organization, because, like I said, we don't have stalls to muck or anything like that. But, you know, we certainly have opportunities for volunteerism, and especially at the makeover in Kentucky in the fall, like, need plenty of people to help us get that thing off the ground. So volunteerism and just kind of staying engaged with what we're doing, or if we have events that are coming to your region, all of that will be available on our website also.
Awesome. Well, Kirsten, it's been so great to have you. Thanks so much for taking some time.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Great questions, you guys.
All right, guys, it's time for Rose and Thorn. Who wants to go first?
I can go first.
Okay.
So I feel like I need to start with my thorn, because I think Ellie might die laughing about my thorn. And she's probably going to think of it as a rose, to be honest.
I'm always excited when there's a
plot twist.
So we're going down to Ocala for Hits, which everybody knows we love Hits. Like, such a fun time. That was great. You know, we always have a bunch of adventures when we go to Florida. And so this time I'm like, it was the kids' spring break. So we're driving down. I load up first thing in the morning. I was going to drive one of the rigs, and Doug's teaching one of the girls to drive the big rig. So I'm driving the four horse in my truck. So I get in. Kids are great. Like, I'm cruising. Honestly, like, Doug stopped. He took a little longer. So I just kept going. And I was probably 45 minutes ahead of him. And I had three horses in my trailer, because the Princess Quincy had his, you know, box stall after, you know, the last kind of situation we had. So I'm unloading the horses, and guys, I'm like feeling great about myself, to be honest. I'm like, this is great. Like, we had clients there, they're helping me unload. And all of a sudden I see this white thing, and I'm like, it's kind of weird. And it's crawling under my tire. And I'm like, okay. So I like, don't grab the horse I was going to grab. And I look under the tire, and I'm like, oh, that's a cat. Kind of looks like one of our new cats. Like, that can't be for real. And so, and I'm being delusional at this point, I understand. So I grab the cat, it lets me grab it by its face and pull it out of like underneath my tires. And I'm like, this isn't my cat. Like, this can't be, because we had this like little sibling set show up, a little girl and boy, and the kids call them Cookie and Ice Cream. And I walk over to my children that are in the back of the truck, like praying they're going to be like, that's not ours. And I'm like, guys. And Abigail's like, Cookie. I'm like, no. I mean, I was just in denial. I somehow, and I don't actually know if I took the cat in the tack room or in the horse part, because I left in the dark. And I don't know if she was hiding under a bunch of the hay and the four-wheeler and stuff, but we took one of our cats from North Carolina to Florida. So then we had to go to the store.
There's more, Ellie.
It's so bad. Ellie, it gets so bad. So then I go to Dollar General. I get it some food, and we keep it in the middle part of Doug's trailer because it's like taller. So we keep it, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to drive home and drive this. You know, the kids have spring breaks ending, but we're there for 2 weeks. I'm going to drive this cat home and we're going to be good because it doesn't need to stay in Florida for 2 weeks. So on Sunday, I go to drive this cat home and we open it up. The kids had played with it every day, left the ramp down. We got it a harness and a leash and it went all around the horse show. It was ridiculous, to be honest.
It was having a great time.
It was having a great time.
I love it.
Sunday morning, we go open it up for me to drive this cat home and there's no cat.
Oh, no.
Anywhere. Oh, it's gone. So then we tell our children, like, no, Cookie's like, she just went to play somewhere. Like, if we leave the ramp down, she's going to come back for her food. Like, we're basically like, you know, this is probably not going to happen. The cat's probably like run away and, you know, not coming back. So I get in the car. I drive all the way back home. I was supposed to fly home, keep in mind, but wasn't going to fly with a cat. 2.5 hours into the trip, the girls found the cat. It was wandering around the horse show, like barn. It just didn't want to leave Florida.
It's like, I'm a horse show cat now. Okay.
So the cat stayed for the additional week. I just drove home for fun and back. They went to school for 4 days. I had to drive back down a day early. And we successfully got the cat home on Sunday of the second week. We put it in the trailer. It went home with us the second week in the trailer. And when we got home at like 9, 10 o'clock at night, Abigail wakes up. They'd slept most of the trip. She wakes up, goes and gets it out of Doug's trailer. Cause I was like, okay, it's going to go in there. So shipped it in there. And literally the cat's now back at home.
Aw. The great adventure. Cookie's great adventure.
I love that.
And the clients, like, we had this big group chat and they're like, we think Cookie should go to every horse show. I'm like, absolutely not. No. So my thorn was the adventures of Cookie.
Oh my goodness. You'll have to post all the pictures of her and her harness at the horse show.
She had a pink harness I had to go find. The whole thing is absolutely ridiculous. So. And then my rose was probably a once in a lifetime experience. Susan Johns, who is a very good friend, vet of ours, did a lot of work on both Trevor and Doug's horses, loves the adventures of our kids everywhere and flying. A couple months ago reached out and said, we sent her like, you know, the adventures of the kids and stuff. And we're lucky enough when we were in Wellington, we flew by Air Force One and we thought that was the coolest thing. So we took pictures of it, like just on the runway, and thought that was super cool. Well, it turns out, long story short, she was with a pilot and we ended up, long story, getting invited to tour Air Force One while we did it right before we went to the Ocala trip.
Oh.
So,
Was this the new Air Force One or the old Air Force One?
No, the one President Trump flies in. And so it's the one that actually Nancy Reagan designed. And that was the coolest part about it, is we got to actually learn about the history that all the different presidents flying in it. Nancy Reagan designed it and she actually never flew in it until Reagan passed away. And she designed it that the presidents could get transported in it once they had passed, that their casket could actually fly in the plane. And so she flew in it. And then we heard all funny stories about, you know, the different presidents and like what they do and, you know, the different class that, like, basically what I found super interesting was that basically you can't move forward in the plane. You can only move backwards. So the media is in the back, and that's why you always see the presidents like in the doorway, because they can move backwards. But it's like the media and the Secret Service and the service members and all that that are flying, and then the VIP guest, and like just the way that the whole thing went was super interesting. And every president's kind of made it their own. And Nancy Reagan wanted it to feel like a home. So she wanted at one point these glass vases to be near everything. And the FFA was like, absolutely not. So they're actually titanium, like bolted, but it is, there's offices in there. It is truly like what I would imagine the White House on, you know, wheels to be like.
Oh, wow. That's neat.
So yeah, so the whole thing was just a very educational thing that, you know, we were amazed that we actually got to do, and it was a blessing. But yeah, it was super cool to go and do that. And yeah, I mean, it was a history lesson in itself for sure.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
So Ellie, what is your rose and thorn?
Well, I'll start with my rose because I have a two-part thorn. So my rose is that Batman is doing really well. He got his recheck CT with contrast, and everything is looking like, yeah, he's got some bone remodeling and things like that, but everything is looking good. He's acting like himself. So he's going to stay on Doxy for like another month, and then he needs his original surgery for his THO, for his arthritis. But that one is a standing surgery, so it's a bit cheaper for me. And then I hope Batman is done with surgery forever.
Surely.
Yeah, I'm like, but I'm just glad that he's doing better on the mend. And let me tell you, I am so grateful because it's expensive, but it's so worth it for the freaking convenience. You can buy Doxy in like a tube, like a wormer tube.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it is so much easier because obviously after like a couple doses of Doxy, right, your horse is like, Doxy tastes terrible.
Yeah, they don't want to eat it.
Yeah, and it's so much easier than mixing the powder in water. This is like a, you know, it's almost like a perfect prep consistency. And yeah. I just squirt in, you know, 15 mls twice a day. And is it $30 a tube? Yes. Does $30 only last me 2 days? Yes. But I'm paying for that convenience because I know he's actually getting the med. I feel like so much gets spit out.
Yeah.
So it's worth it. So thank you to whoever created that. Although Matt got some in his mouth the other day and he said it's definitely not apple flavored.
Oh no.
I was like, well,
how did that happen?
I don't,
that's painful.
I think he said he was like, he somehow just like, he was wiping his mouth and then he got some, like wiping Batman's mouth. And he got some on his finger and he didn't know. And then he had like a hair because everyone is shedding everything in his mouth. So then he just touched his mouth before washing his hands. He's like, oh. But yeah. So I'm glad that Batman is doing well. And I'm hoping that we will continue on this path. My thorn is really sad because my mom had to put down her heart horse, Sully.
I'm so sorry, Ellie.
Freak accident a couple weeks ago, and it just totally sucked because, you know, it's hard when you have to make a decision, but it's hard too when it just, you're not at all prepared. And he was just like, honestly, the coolest gentle giant. He was like almost 18 hands, and he, you know, he was the first horse I rode after being paralyzed because I was like, I trust this horse to, you know, just beep bop around on. And he was definitely like, the bond that he and my mom had was incredible. So my thorn is just, I feel so bad for my mom, and I'm sad for me because I loved him and I'm going to try not to cry. I'm sad for my mom because this was definitely her heart horse, and
yeah,
it's the first time for her that she doesn't have another horse at the barn. So like it's completely out of her routine. So that's, I think, just adding to the level of hardness. But it's a two-part thorn because people suck. And I think mainly because people don't know how to handle grief, right? And they don't know how to, like, say things. And it's one of those things where people should just keep their mouths shut if they don't know what to say. Because instead of, like, you know, being supportive or anything like that, people have been saying the most, like, inconsiderate things to my mom. Like, oh, well, I'm glad you don't have, or I'm sure you're glad that you don't smell like horse now when you get home from the barn.
Oh,
and like,
gosh.
Oh, I'm sure you're glad that you don't have to drive in bad weather now to go walk your horse when they're stuck inside. It's like, do you think at all before you speak? Like,
no,
obviously
people are like, just so unaware. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, and this is from fellow horse people, which, like, I'm like, the hell?
Oh.
Yeah. Like, I'm stunned. And my mom's too nice to say anything to these people, but I want to ream them new
then new you're buttholes. Annoyed even more.
I'm like, you know, just like, if you don't have something nice to say, just shut your mouth.
Right?
Seriously. Ugh, I'm sorry for your mom.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I can continue the people suck train on my thorn. So, this isn't the thorn part of the thorn, but I moved Mikey to a new barn, which seems a little unexpected, right? Like, but
he kind of had some questions about that.
Yeah. So he's at a new barn, but it's lovely. It's a massive upgrade for him. But in a funny twist of events, it's the barn that Mikey lived at previously before I moved to the. It's like we moved back to where we were before, but
oh, good.
If you remember, I was I was leasing a farm with a friend of mine, and then that property sold, which is why I left. Well, the person who bought it is my vet. So my horse vet bought this property and has lived there for the last, I don't know, I think I've been gone from that property like a year and a half. But she bought it, and she's not like a, you know, like a full-fledged boarding operation, but there was an opportunity to move back to that property and not have to shovel the manure myself anymore. And I was like, wow, that sounds great.
Sounds really nice.
So I moved. But there's some other parts to the reason why I moved, and it's sadly people. It's people. The last barn I was at was like a you know, just a normal boarding facility. It was, you know, like someone's had a barn in their backyard, but it was close to town. It was more of like an urban farm. So it was a smaller property, right? Because the closer you get to like town, the less land there is. And there's a part of town where I live where there's like an old history of like horse farms in the area, but they're very small. So, and like they have some urban horse trails, which is kind of cool. And the city has a park with like arenas and stuff. So like it was fun and interesting to be part of this part of town for a little while. But I don't know. Obviously, I'm sure if you interviewed all of the women involved, like none of us are innocent. But so I can't say I didn't do something to rub somebody the wrong way. But it just became clear that I was not really welcome at my barn anymore. So I started looking for options. But I'm sad to say that as like a 38-year-old woman who's owned horses my whole life. I've never, you know what I mean? Like I've never really left a boarding situation with a bad taste in my mouth. So it is what it is, you know, personality clashes. I was the only person who had a dressage horse there. Maybe that had something to do with it. You know, like I wasn't using the trainers at the farm. I don't know. Anyways, I hate that exists though in our sport, and I don't know why. You know what I mean? Like I don't know why everyone can't be nice.
Yeah, people suck.
People do, and it's weird. It's like I felt like I was made a lot of friends there and was invested in other people's journeys with their horses and helping them when I could. So, you know, it's sad when things don't work out, you know, because I felt blindsided by it. Cause I was like, I didn't realize people had
were that
problems.
Terrible.
Yeah. You know, so, but that's okay. You know, it's, I am in my life and every aspect of my life, personal, professional, you just sometimes people don't get along, you know? So, yeah. My personality is not for everybody apparently. But so Mikey moved back to a farm that he's lived at before. And he's back in big grass pastures with lots of friends. And honestly, just being there for a couple of weeks, he seems, so much happier. So I'm happy for him. And the previous barn, that year and a half that I spent there, proved that I can keep Mikey sound, which, you know, when I moved there, I wasn't sure. We were still rehabbing the coffin bone fracture. And I didn't know if it meant he was going to be retired or not. But that place did give me that opportunity to go, okay, I can keep this horse sound. We can still have some riding goals. And I don't have to be an insane micromanaging helicopter mom, and Mikey can go outside and have friends again. And so it served its purpose, and but I'm just happy for Mikey, who seems really thrilled to be back at the place we're at. We have a covered arena with nice footing. You can walk off the property onto hundreds of acres of trails, which is great. So overall, it's a rose. Like, I'm happy for the move. My
just
thorn.
Sad at the how do you had to get there.
Right. Yeah. Just sad that it took, that it like cost relationships and friendships. Yeah. And like for no good reason. You know what I mean? Like they're like none of that needed to happen. But I can't control other people, and I'm gonna focus on what I can control, right?
Absolutely.
So my thorn is that shortly after I moved Mikey, like less than a week, I was driving home and I was like at a stoplight and just like, you know, sitting at the red light, and then wha-bam, I got rear-ended. And it was a big rear end, a man who was quite clearly under the influence, because he was later arrested, rear-ended me and totaled my truck. And it's,
that's not terrifying.
It's just been a nightmare, you know? I mean, my truck was old, and I loved her, and she had definitely seen better days, but, and she kept me safe that day. I'm really lucky, because I think if I was in a smaller car, the situation would have been very different. But, it's just a nightmare. And for the record, insurance is a scam. Like, everything about this process is just such a pain in the butt. And I'm like driving a little rental small SUV right now, and I just miss my truck, and it's such a hassle. Everything about this is such a hassle. And it's like not even my fault, and it's expensive, and everything is just a crapshoot, you know? So that is my thorn, is like, cause it's like an agonizingly slow process of like weeks to figure out what happens next, for them to decide that my truck was totaled, that, you know, like it's just a pain in the butt. Mm. So that is my thorn.
That's a big one.
I'm just glad you're okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Me too. I'm glad I'm okay. But RIP to my poor truck. I miss it. I miss my truck.
I bet.
But, you know, I'll get a new one, I guess, another truck eventually. So, but on a lighter note, we have a mailbag from Amy, who posted this in our Facebook group, which I thought would be fun to discuss among all you guys. So Amy wants to know do we have any favorite exercises to help build fitness in horses? It sounds like she's bringing a couple horses back into work and is looking for good ways to get them fit and trim and like ready for show season.
I have two big ones. Walking, lots of walking. And also, if you can find any kind of terrain, any kind of hills, any kind of everything, that is massive for us. Like we even the jumpers will go on our big hill and just work on the side of the hill. And it doesn't have to be long. Like a lot of times we just walk them up and down or walk them all around. And then sometimes we'll do a small little canter sprint up. Sometimes we'll flat them on the side of the hill. Sometimes we'll flat them on the top and then walk them down, and just adding in a bit of that terrain, I find really kind of helps them build the fitness faster than you can do on any sort of flat surface.
Mm. I love that. Okay. Yeah. Ellie, what are your tips?
I definitely agree with hills, but poles, drop poles, that everything.
Too. Yep.
I love poles. I loved, I love raised poles, especially for like when you can't do something, like if you can't do trot poles, just like walking them over raised poles just to like get their hind engaged. So for example, if they're, you know, rehabbing or stuck on stall rest because of an injury, like a cut or something, and you're trying to make sure that they don't waste their muscle. Like those are things that I really like. And I'm a big fan of, you know, just like simple trot sets, you know, just like walk for a long time, trot for 2 minutes and then walk for another long time. Like, I think that stuff, I know that helps me build my fitness after winter off.
Sure.
So I know it helps them too.
Oh, those are great. Yeah. So I love hills, but those are hard to come by in Florida. So yes. I definitely agree with the poles. And then like when I've brought Mikey back, like rehabbing, I did a lot on the trails, like trot sets, just like get up in a 2-point and like trot for several minutes. And then, you know, as the weeks go on, because I couldn't do a lot of circles right during rehab, like just a long straight line of trotting, I just felt like that was good fitness for me too, you know, being in a 2-point and having to be up off his back, and you can just go for longer rides out on the trails with a little bit more varied terrain is what I would add to that. So I think those are all great exercises for you, Amy. But if you have any others that you guys would suggest to our listeners, you can always post that in our Facebook group, too. We always have great discussions there. And if you want to send us a question that you'd like for us to answer on the show, you can always send us an email at justine@heelsdownmedia.com. Or again, you can post that in the Facebook group. It's the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. And if you want to hear more from us, check us out at heelsdownmag.com for the latest news. And make sure you're following us on social media. We're at Heelsdown Happy Hour on Instagram and at Heelsdown Mag on Facebook and TikTok. And if you love our show, please give us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We want to say thank you to our partners, Hits and EcoGold. All right, guys, that's a wrap.
Cheers!